What were people eating in Kansas City 100 years ago? Join me, Suzanne Hogan, for an interactive food tour, exploring the cuisine that sustained local working men and women a century ago. We'll have a taste and talk to Kansas City food historian Andrea Broomfield. The event is Monday, March 9th at the Midwest Genealogy Center, brought to you by KCUR's new podcast, A People's History of Kansas City. Doors open at 6:30. Reserve your seat at kcur.org/whatweate.
The contour of the border around Thailand is shaped like an elephant's head. That's something you'll learn if you pick up Pete Doolin's recent article in Feast Magazine about regional Thai foods in and around Kansas City. Pete grew up on Thai food before it was trendy in the U.S. It's what he ate at home, and it's what he likes to make today in his own kitchen. So as we begin to see more variety and regional nuance in the Thai offerings available in and around Kansas City, Pete is here to give us a little lesson. I'm Gina Kaufman. Pete Doolin, welcome to KCUR's Central Standard.
Thank you.
When I say we're seeing more variety and regional nuance in local Thai food, what exactly does that mean? Paint the picture of what we had a few years back as opposed to now.
Sure. So I think the first introduction to Thai food for a lot of people is like the national dish Pad Thai. And then what I kind of refer to as like the greatest hits of Thai food, like just really classic noodle dishes or curries that are pretty commonplace on menus throughout Kansas City. Over recent years, we're starting to see some more regional specialties that reflect a specific region or place.
And that's becoming a more common thing.
Yeah. You can still find plenty of restaurants where they're going to carry popular dishes that are known to an American dining audience because it's popular, it pays the bills. But we're starting to see more and more specific dishes that might reflect more of a northern Thai or northeastern Thai influence.
Okay, well, later in today's show, we might hear more about some of those restaurants and some of those dishes. But talk to me about your relationship with this food and the country it comes from. You are from Kansas City. Your mom came here from Thailand.
Yes, she is from central Thailand originally. My mom's side of the family, most of them are still in that area in about a couple hours outside of Bangkok, so in the central agricultural region. Some of them live and work a little bit closer to Bangkok. But I grew up eating Thai food as well as kind of classic Midwestern food growing up here in Kansas City.
So casseroles and such?
Yeah. Casseroles and then, roast beef. And then I always like to say that growing up and eating vegetables, if they were kind of the classic vegetables like spinach or lima beans or turnips, they were always kind of like overcooked and bitter and things that I didn't like. But when I had Thai food that was stir-fried or steamed or what have you, they might be more unusual vegetables like bamboo shoots or bok choy or what have you. But the colors were brighter, the flavors were fresher. And so I appreciated those a little bit more as a kid and then growing up.
What are your earliest memories of eating Thai food specifically? Can you share some of those food memories?
Sure. And I'm going to go back just a little bit further because I'm the oldest of four. And I remember being very young and accompanying my mom to Asian grocery stores, like in the River Market. And seeing her purchase food and like seeing the fish counters that were very basic, not super refined like you might see in a suburban supermarket. So like seeing the ingredients, like where that food came from. And then I have distinct memories of sitting at the kitchen table and doing my homework in grade school and listening and watching my mom prepare a meal that would be dinner. And
is there a certain action that's sort of like is emblematic of that to you?
Sure. There's a lot of prep work with Thai food. So sometimes like she would chop and mince garlic or maybe some meat to like really mince it fine. And she would you know, use her chef's knife on the wooden cutting board, and would have this particular rhythm that was da 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 da.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and it's you know, this kind of sensory, you know, auditory aspect on top of smelling the garlic sizzling in the pan and filling the kitchen, then the succession of other ingredients that would be added, and kind of this sensory buildup to actually tasting it and sitting down and eating with her.
Did you cook with your mom as a kid, or is that something you took more of an interest in later?
Later. I would help prep. As I got older, I would...
When you can be trusted with a knife.
Yeah, and just... you know, going out to the garden and picking fresh basil or chili peppers or what have you, you know, washing things, having a bowl of bean sprouts and like picking through those to make sure I get, you know, the best ones. And that, I think, familiarized myself with ingredients and just watching and learning by osmosis. And then it wasn't probably till college when I started to need to fend for myself that I started to learn how to cook, because the dorm food wasn't nearly as delicious or nutritious.
And you didn't get the da-da-da-da.
Right, right. So, yeah, I started really actively cooking for myself in college and afterward.
What does the country of Thailand and its culture mean to you? I know that's a really big question, but I can tell there is something just really profound that you are connecting with in the food from the way you write about it. It's very much about the food you're writing, but it's also very much about more than that.
So it's, I think growing up, I didn't dwell on this a lot, and not until I was older, but you know, so I'm the son of an immigrant. And I think a lot of American born children of immigrants, have this connection to their culture and their family through food. And that was certainly true for me, because I went to Thailand as a baby, like I guess maybe like 2 years old. And then I didn't go back to Thailand until I was in my early 30s. Just for various reasons, it just never worked out. So I grew up most of my early life not really knowing most of my Thai family. I did have an aunt and uncle that lived in Parkville, and I was very close to them. So, you know, listening to my mom talk Thai, I'm not fluent in Thai. She would talk to her Thai friends. We would have, you know, Buddha and like other figurines that were from Thailand in the household. So it was kind of there on the fringes, but it wasn't a core part of my identity. I just didn't understand it firsthand. And so food was that connection to, and I knew, I think intuitively that it's like I was eating things at home that were different than what other American kids were eating.
So all of that being said, you have made two dishes for us today, and you're going to kind of walk us through what they are, how they're made. I have already tried them, so, and they're good, they're delicious. I will sort of share my experience as an eater as we go. So let's start with the one closest to me, the one that looks soupier and kind of like a lighter color.
So that is, the core of it is Thai eggplants, which are a little bit different from the eggplants most people are familiar with. So they're actually round, almost like a little bit bigger than a lime, and they're green. So that's like the core vegetable in it. And then there's also chicken and tofu. But the broth is essentially coconut milk and some red curry paste and Thai basil and garlic. So it's light and silky. To me, it's kind of comfort food, and you would serve that over rice.
It is the so. First of all, the eggplants are, they are almost in texture on some level like cherry tomatoes, only a little bit bigger, and they're green, which is, I think, when you say eggplant, people tend to picture something purple.
Right, and there's like a lot of vegetables. There's many different types of eggplant depending on where they're grown. So you've got, you know, kind of classic, you know, Italian eggplant that's purple and bulbous. There's Japanese eggplant, which is long and narrow, like a tube. And then there's all sorts of these round eggplants that can be a pale green to yellow or white. So the ones that I'm familiar with for Thai food are these round green eggplant, which as they're cooked down, they you know, kind of soften, and it's the texture is probably a little bit like okra.
Well, there was no sliminess.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as slimy. I purposely didn't overcook them.
Good thinking.
Yeah. Sometimes, especially if it's a leftover, you reheat it and it gets a little bit softer and slimier. But, I mean, this is freshly prepared, and I don't like that slimy texture.
It's very smooth and very mild, like flavorful but very mild. Can you talk to me about achieving that kind of flavor without heat?
Sure. I mean, there's like just the tiniest bit of heat from the curry paste. But I made this intentionally because it is mild and it's subtle. And that's one of the stereotypes of Thai food is that everything is hot and, you know, and you want it Thai hot if you order it at the restaurant and, you know, it'll melt your face off. And that's fine if that's what you'd like, but that's not all Thai food. Thai food is actually very much about balance. Those different flavors, salty, sweet, bitter, et cetera, you know, umami. And not every single Thai dish incorporates all of those flavor profiles, but you'll find most of them in a dish, and it's very much about balance. So this dish, there's like a real mild sweetness from the coconut milk. There's a little bit of heat with the red curry. There's a little savory herbal aspect from the Thai basil. And everything.
I like that you use chicken and tofu also. There's this sort of convention in American restaurants right now that's like pick your protein, which is sort of a weird thing.
Yeah. And you could use one or the other. If you're a vegetarian, you could just use tofu. I put both in there just for a little bit of variety. When my mom
they play
makes,
very nicely together.
I think so. When my mom makes at home, she will usually use catfish or some type of fish, and that takes on a very different texture. So it's going to be a little bit earthier and more, you know, it's the fish imparts a lot of flavor to the broth, but it's also not as appealing to a lot of people.
You know, you said your mom is from Central Thailand. Mm-hmm. Does this dish reflect some aspects of Central Thai cuisine?
The central region of Thailand is a pretty broad area, and Bangkok anchors it. So if you're closer to Bangkok or in Bangkok, those dishes tend to be richer and spicier because there's more wealth there. And historically, because that's where the king lives, the royal family, they have more access to the best ingredients, and they're just more intensely flavored. As you get, I think, further out into the countryside, you'll have some of the same influences, but they won't necessarily be as intense and rich. To me, this is, I made this dish because it reminds me of a dish that my mom would make, and that it's simple comfort food, especially wintertime when you want something that's very light but still warming and easy to eat. That's why I would make this.
You know, and so what is the name of this dish again?
So I don't know what the formal Thai name, the Thai eggplant that I use in particular, it's makur. My mom probably would say, no, that's not quite how you pronounce it.
Going to hear something about that later.
Yeah. There's chicken is gai. And so I don't know what the full, proper name would be for this dish, putting everything together.
But you would call it?
Thai eggplant with chicken and a red curry.
And so this other dish is the spicier of the two that you've brought, and it looks more like a stir fry of ground meat and green beans.
Yeah. So this has a lot of the similar ingredients. There's minced beef and long beans, which are like string beans sliced up, and then Thai basil, garlic, red curry paste as well, but there's no coconut milk. So you could make the same dish and put coconut milk and make it saucier. But I made it this other version, which is called gang, where you would take the curry paste and the meat and you would saute it in oil so that the paste covers the meat, and you cook the meat and then you add your other ingredients.
It's really delicious. It is spicy, but it's interesting to me the way that in this case, I feel like the heat kind of creeps up slowly and it does have a limit. It's not overpowering. My pet peeve kind of is food where the spice masks every other flavor.
Right. And that kind of goes back to balance. My mom actually has a lower tolerance for heat than like some of her sisters. When I eat their Thai food in Thailand, it can be a bit hotter. And it varies, kind of going back to regions. There are certain regions where foods are going to be spicier and more intense. And then you get down to the community or the household level and the chef and who's making it and their individual preferences. So I made this to have a good amount of heat and like intensity of flavor, but not overwhelming. And it's balanced out because there's a little bit of sugar in there that just kind of helps offset some of the heat.
I have a question. There's one ingredient in this dish that comes from your mom's garden.
Yes. Kaffir lime leaf, makrut. So it's a lime leaf it's kind of an unusual shape. It's kind of the leaves grow almost like a figure eight. So there's kind of two leaves attached to each other. With this, I slice it really thin, chiffonade. So it's like really thin ribbons because it's kind of fibrous, but it imparts this really aromatic lime smell and flavor.
This seems like a really crucial ingredient in Thai food that people less familiar with Thai food may not have tried.
Yeah, it's not commonly sold in grocery stores. Like you would have to seek it out if you didn't have your own plant to harvest from. And it's not used in every dish, but there are certain dishes where it does impart a very specific aroma and flavor. And there are different ingredients that are used for that purpose. It's not necessarily going to affect the balance, but it might be really aromatic.
Pete Doolin, stay with me through the break, okay?
All right.
You can read Pete's story on Thai dishes in the February issue of Feast Magazine. In just a minute, the rest of our food critics will be joining us on a search for the best Asian food in and around Kansas City. So Thai food, but also Vietnamese, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Filipino. We want all the best Asian food in town, and you can help us with that by calling 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and now we're looking for the best Asian food in Kansas City with a panel of experts. And with you, call 816-235-2888 or tweet us your favorite dishes and where to get them. We're at KCUR CST. Pete Doolin, freelance food writer and author of Touring Thailand in this month's Feast Magazine. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Bonjuing Lee is here too. He is an international food photographer known online as the Ulterior Epicure, and he's based here in Kansas City. Hi, Bonjuing.
Hi.
And we've also got Danielle Lehman with us. She's the host of Open Belly KC. It's a podcast all about the foods and stories of immigrants in our community, and it's a concept she's expanding beyond Kansas City too. Hello, Danielle.
Good morning.
So, Bonjuing, we just heard from Pete about how Thai offerings have expanded in KC. You grew up eating homemade Chinese food in Kansas City at a time when, as I remember it personally, the Chinese restaurant landscape was very dominated by fast food style buffets. And I wonder if you've seen an evolution there as well.
I think there has been quite a large expansion of Asian food, not just Chinese, but Asian food in general in the Kansas City area, certainly. Yeah.
How much of the change would you see as a larger cultural shift throughout the U.S. how much of that is about Kansas City and how much of that is about something bigger than Kansas City?
Oh, I certainly think that America as a whole has become far more educated and open to Asian cuisines in the past. You know, when we were kids, sushi was not something anyone talked about. And now it's like you can find it ever. You can find it in grocery stores. You can find. So I think there is a far more education. And then also just because of that, there's far more familiarity and comfort with it.
Well, let's start talking about favorite restaurants and dishes. We're looking for the best Asian food in Kansas City, 816-235-2888. Bonjoing, you wanted to give a nod to a few local Chinese restaurants, Kinlin, Bowling's.
Yeah, and I've talked about them before, but I think that one of my favorite places is still Kinlin. It's near the UMKC campus. I just think that they have some far more traditional dishes that they do very well. They do have a traditional menu that you can request that has dishes that are for you know, maybe dishes that a lot of people are unfamiliar with but are very traditional to Chinese home cooking and regional dishes.
Is there one particular dish that you would recommend?
There is one thing that they do really well that I really liked. It is a tofu dish, and it is it's a firm tofu that's been smoked, and it's darker. And it's the texture is a little more it's very firm, and they slice it very thinly, and usually they'll stir fry it with pork. I love that dish.
There's another place on your list that I want to talk about right now. It's Vietnam Cafe, a real neighborhood spot. It's almost always packed.
Yes, it's a favorite. It's down in Columbus Park. It's always packed. It's a very popular place for lunch, especially. And, you know, during these colder months, I think soup is a very comforting thing, and they've got a lot of, you know, hearty big bowls of hot steaming pho and other soups. One of my favorite things to get there is the banh xeo, which is a Vietnamese pancake. It's crispy. It's a rice pancake that they color with turmeric, so it's yellow, and usually comes with either pork or shrimp and some vegetables, lots of herbs, and they come with lettuce wrap. So you just kind of fold all that up, and there's usually like a fish sauce dipping sauce that comes with it. That's great.
Yum.
Yeah.
Danielle, tell me about Lotus Hot Pot. It's in a neighborhood that you are calling Little Saigon, and I want to hear a little bit about that, too.
Yeah, so Lotus Hot Pot is up in Gladstone, and it's in a shopping center that's kind of known as Little Saigon. It has a number of restaurants in the shopping center, so you could totally spend a day there just kind of hopping from restaurant to restaurant, which I have done. It's very, very fun. Lotus Hot Pot is a hot pot restaurant. So for people who haven't had hot pot, basically they bring a bowl of broth to the table and put it on an induction burner and heat it up. And then you can kind of build your own pot with meats and vegetables, and you can basically order whatever you want. The menu is huge and can kind of be a little overwhelming. So you can get like a combination meat and some vegetables, and then you actually cook it yourself in the broth. So the broth is very hot and the meat is sliced super thin. So when you dip it in with your chopsticks, it cooks the meat in like 10 or 15 seconds. Then you can take it out and dip it in some dipping sauce. And it's just a really fun communal experience and a way to try a lot of new types of food with a big group of friends.
And so this place is called Lotus Hot Pot. Do you recommend anything in particular there?
So I recommend just having fun with it. There's not really a right or wrong way to do it. So just look at the menu, order a few things. They also have a sauce bar where you can create your own sauce, which is a little bit overwhelming, but there's really not a right or wrong way. So it's just a fun place to experiment and create your own meal.
Tell me about the twice cooked pork at 888 International Market.
So 888 is located in Overland Park right off 119th, and it's actually an Asian market. It's quite large, and they have inside two different food stands or counters that are serving prepared food. So I like both of the counters, but the twice cooked pork is at the counter that's in the back of the market. So you have to go to the back, and then they have a pretty small menu of prepared food there. The twice cooked pork is it's a stir fry dish with braised pork, bamboo, napa cabbage, scallion, carrots, and it's just tossed in this sauce that's made of soybean paste, chili oil. It's a little bit spicy, it's salty, savory, and it's just a really casual kind of comfort food dish. And I like going to 888 because it's pretty affordable and you can try a lot of new dishes just in the market. And then you can even buy some ingredients to try to cook some food at home.
Thinking about twice cooked pork and seeing the number of times that pork appears on everyone here's lists, I am sort of curious about the role of pork in many Asian cuisines. Is that something that we can talk about a little bit real quick before going to some of these callers?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know, like, in Thailand, like, beef's not common. It's, you know, very expensive to raise, and it's you just don't find very much of it. So it's more common that you're going to find pork or chicken, if you're in a coastal area, like fresh seafood. And then inland, you would have freshwater fish as well. So pork is just a super versatile ingredient to work with.
Well, and I also think that just because pigs are so easily reproduced and they reproduce at such a fast rate, it's a very and they eat anything. So it's great for feeding a large population, which Asia generally has. In Chinese, actually, when you say the word for meat, ro, I've heard many people in China say that you're assuming that you're talking about pork unless you specify another animal. That's how popular and how pervasive pork is. It is the meat of choice, I think, for a lot of Asian cooking, especially in China.
Does anyone here have a favorite pork dish other than the one we just heard about that they want to talk about, and then we'll pick back up with whatever our callers are sending us to?
I think one of mine is it's a Chinese dish called kou rou. It is basically pork belly. It's very fatty, and it's braised for a long time in a very dark sauce. And it usually comes with pickled mustard greens that's underneath it, and it's all braised together. And it's just a very comforting – it's not diet food, but it's delicious. And you can find it at quite a few Chinese restaurants around town if you ask for it.
What is the name of the dish again?
I don't know how they would translate it into English, but braised pork belly probably would if you asked for that. But it's kou rou. Yeah, is how you would say it in Chinese.
The Thai chef Pam Liberta has a dish, lab mu ku lana. It's a northern style lab. Lab is a dish where the meat is minced really fine and stir fried. So this incorporates ground pork as well as shredded pork skin, a lot of spices and vegetables as well. And I like that it uses pork in two different ways in the same dish. So you get this really intensely flavored pork, but then you get the textural element from the shredded pork skin as well.
Well, okay, you can join this conversation about the best Asian food in Kansas City at 816-235-2888. We're going to talk to Don in Shawnee now. Hi, Don.
Good morning. How are you all?
Very good. What do you like?
Well, I was listening to this. I've got a recommendation. This is in the Lenexa Town Center, the public mart area. It's a place called Chewology, and it's very informal, very good. It's actually Taiwanese food, a little variation on Chinese, obviously, but the food is excellent there. They make everything right there in front of you, have beverages, wine, beer, that type of thing. It's small but excellent.
Sounds fun.
Owner is a young lady by the name of Katie. She makes the place, and the chef is Josh, and both of them excellent, excellent people and excellent food.
Well, thanks, Don. Thank you. Danielle, is this a place that you're familiar with?
Yeah, and I was going to say there's actually a couple of Asian spots in the Lenexa Public Market that I think are worth noting. So another one would be Sohaila's Kitchen that prepares Pakistani comfort food. And then there's also a new Korean pastry pop-up that just opened in the last couple of weeks called All Day Cafe. And the owner, Tim Whitaker, he was born in Korea, but he was adopted by a family in Kansas City when he was 7 months old. And he really wanted to connect back to his Korean culture, and so food was kind of a way for him to do that. He spent a couple of months in Seoul exploring the night markets there and was really inspired to start bringing Korean pastries to Kansas City, and he started this pop-up at the Lenexa Public Market. Right now, he currently has two items on the menu. So he has the hoduk, which is a Korean pancake, and then he also has the kwabegi, which is a Korean twisted donut, not too different than what you might find in a donut shop around Kansas City, but they're both very good, and I highly recommend his spot.
So, Pete, Banh Mi Fan is north of the river, and you're taking us there for a banh mi sandwich. To start with, what is a banh mi sandwich? Because that has become such a popular dish on Kansas City menus, but I don't know if everybody knows the history and story of what this sandwich is.
Sure. So a banh mi sandwich is a sandwich that is made with a baguette as the bread, and it reflects that colonial influence of the French in Vietnam. And so the sandwich is kind of a marriage of Vietnamese ingredients packaged in this baguette. And it's one of my favorite sandwiches in the world because it's just very satisfying.
In the world?
Yeah, yeah. It's
Specifically the one at Banh Mi Fun or just in general the Banh Mi?
In general. I mean, I'll eat Banh Mi just about any place, but I like the ones at Banh Mi Fun in particular because they've got a great variety of options there. So like the classic Banh Mi probably is going to feature like some Vietnamese cold cuts like bologna, pot thai, and then fresh vegetables in it. And I think that's what is the familiar for a lot of people as far as like the first option. But there's plenty of other options. Like they have a caramelized pork belly with the fresh vegetables as well. That's fantastic. Or like spicy lemongrass chicken. If you're vegetarian, they have a great like tofu option as well. And to me, a finer point of Banh Mi's is that the bread has to be just right. If it's too crusty and too chewy, that takes away from the experience. You shouldn't have to have your jaw be sore after eating it. So it's that fine balance of where are they getting their bread from and, you know, is it – has that crunch to it but still not too chewy.
So you like to get something else at Banh Mi Fun as well.
Salty lemonade is one thing that I like that's available at Banh Mi Fun, and it's something I hadn't really encountered before. It's really refreshing, especially in the summertime. So it's fresh-made lemonade, but they have – salt in it as well. And it's almost, it reminds me of Gatorade in that it's very refreshing, but it has this, just this different flavor profile that you wouldn't expect, but you really enjoy and appreciate.
Bonjuing, you are recommending a Hawaiian restaurant, and you are also raising the question of whether that is an Asian restaurant. Discuss.
Yeah, I included it because I thought it's an interesting. I recently went. There's a new location. There's four locations, I believe, in Kansas City.
One down Hawaiian Brothers.
Hawaiian Brothers, yes, and they serve this very sort of simple Hawaiian box lunch. That is, you choose a meat. There's plenty of rice, and it usually comes with macaroni salad, a very Hawaiian thing. But you know, Hawaiian culture is a lot of it. It has been influenced by Asian culture, and you know, they have spam mitsubi there, which is sort of a very Japanese type of a thing, where it's a ball of rice with a piece of spam on top, with, you know, wrapped very much like sushi, kind of in a way, and also just the abundance of rice in Hawaiian, you know, cooking. So I just thought that was a very and you know, they use a lot of sauces, soy sauce marinades on their chicken, and a lot of ingredients that, you know, are very reminiscent of Asian cooking. And I just thought that was a really sort of interesting way of looking at Asian food.
Any thoughts on whether Hawaiian food is Asian food?
I think it has, you know, definitely Asian influences as well. So I think you're spot on with that. And it's, you know, it's, there's, you know, kind of Pacific Islander influence as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I posted about this a while back on Facebook. It's like, I respect the culture, like the ingredients and like, and how it came about as kind of a plate lunch. But I ate at Hawaiian Brothers, and like personally, like, I'm not a fan because it just doesn't have as much flavor and variety as I would like.
But Bonjuing, you are recommending this restaurant. What do you like to get there?
Well, I just think that they offer a very simple, quick lunch option that has brought, you know, a different type of flavor to Kansas City in terms of this sort of fast casual concept. And I think they've done a nice job of marketing themselves. And, you know, it's a unique perspective for Kansas City fast casual that we haven't really seen.
Have you ever had a Hawaiian plate lunch in Hawaii? I'm curious.
Yes, I have. And of course, you're right. The variety is far greater in Hawaii. I mean, you have other options like poi, and there's fish options as well. This one is very meat heavy. You either have pork or chicken in there. I think they do have a vegetable option as well. But yeah, you're very limited here in it. We can get into the whole discussion about authenticity, which I don't think they're going for. That's a whole nother, you know, can of worms to open. But I don't think they're going for that. But I do think that what Hawaiian Brothers does is it's just a very fun option that makes you think a little bit, you know, about how what we're talking about earlier, how diverse our food culture is now and how many different voices there are in it.
Pete, You have mentioned Waldo Thai already. Tell us more about the restaurant. You've mentioned one of the dishes you get there, and I want to give you a chance to also tell us about what else you recommend.
Sure. So I really like Waldo Thai and what the chef is doing there, because she's taking a food, you know, Thai food and the popular conception of it over the past 20 or 30 years, and she's taking a little bit more of a fine dining approach to it and elevating the dishes that she's preparing. There's a lot more focus on regional dishes as well. Just even the serving environment, this white tablecloth. So she's trying to set an expectation of a more bistro-type experience that you might find in an American or European setting. And one of the other dishes that I really like is khao tod nam tsad, which is a crispy seasoned rice salad that has cured pork sausage. It's filling, but at the same time, it's light, and it has so much flavor and texture to it that it's just really satisfying.
Danielle, you are also recommending a dish at Waldo Thai.
Yeah, right now on the menu, they have a dish called khao kamu, and it's basically a braised ham hock that is then it's simmered for over 3 hours. It's caramelized in palm and brown sugars and Chinese five spice, and it's served with mustard greens, broccoli, hard-boiled egg, and jasmine rice. You can make it spicy by adding a little sambal, but it's just really warm and cozy, almost like a curry dish served over rice. And what I love about Waldo Thai is the menu changes all the time. So I just like to go in and ask Pam Liberta, the chef, you know, what do you recommend that's on the menu right now? And that was the thing they told me I had to have, and I did not regret it.
Now, Pete, you are kind of a drink guy, and I'm surprised that you haven't mentioned the drinks, because this restaurant is kind of known for their bar service as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Daryl Liu is the bar manager there, and he creates some really fantastic cocktails. I'll be honest, like, when I go there to eat.
I don't think any restaurateur would object to hearing that.
Yeah, but like the cocktails that Daryl's preparing are the same attention to ingredients and quality that you find on the food side, and he's incorporating Asian ingredients in a unconventional way, but still it strikes a really great balance, so it's not novelty.
I want to take a call from Chris in Kansas City. Chris, what do you recommend?
Yes, hello. My favorite dish of Asian food is probably the rainbow peanut noodles at Lulu's Thai Noodle Shop. The red bell peppers, cilantro in there, peanuts, cucumbers, bean sprouts. It's got rice noodles. I get it with chicken or tofu.
Okay, Chris, thank you for that recommendation. Pete, he's recommending a dish that you will see on a lot of Thai menus locally. Rainbow noodles? Or am I imagining that?
I'm not familiar with it, honestly.
Well, he has mentioned one other Thai restaurant in town that he likes. Where else would you recommend people go? You have quite a few Thai restaurants on your list.
There's one in Overland Park, just to, you know, get out in the suburbs, Pad Thai, that I like, and I came across this restaurant when I was doing my research for the Feast article, and they feature some Southern Thai dishes, and one that I experienced specifically for this article is Kwa Kling, which is a dry meat curry that's made with pork, so you've got that pork element again. There's no sauce to it. There's no coconut milk like you might find in some other Thai dishes. So, again, you're taking your curry paste. In this case, it's a yellow gold curry paste that's stir-fried with a little bit of oil with the meat, and it's sautéed, and you get this really intense flavor that coats the meat. And what I like about it is it's a slow-burning dish in terms of the heat, and that warmth builds, and it's very comforting.
Name of restaurant and dish once again?
Pad Thai is the restaurant in Overland Park, and the dish is Kwa Kling.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break. KCUR's Central Standard will be right back with this edition of Food Fridays. Today's topic is Asian food, as in the best Asian food in Kansas City. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in a minute. We are back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard. And today's food critics are Bonjuing Lee, Danielle Lehman, and Pete Doolin. Hi again, you guys.
Good morning.
Hi, Gina.
There.
We are taking calls, but not for much longer, at 816-235-2888. We're also taking tweets. We're at KCURCST, and we're hearing there from Casey Kimchi, who says, grilled milkfish with roasted garlic, onions, and tomatoes is one of the best fish dishes in Kansas City, and she's recommending that at Casey Pinoy. She says there's an eggplant omelet that's also shown. Give Filipino food a try. Kansas City is her, is she's imploring us to do that. She says it's a mix of Spanish and Chinese influences. And Danielle, you are also recommending Casey Pinoy.
Yes, one of my favorite dishes, and maybe my favorite dish in Kansas City, is at Casey Pinoy. It's a dish called sisig, and I love the story behind this dish because it's about a woman who is very resourceful. So she lived near the Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines, and the folks at the Air Force Base had been butchering pigs to feed the military there, and they were just kind of discarding the pig head. And she said, hold on, I think I can do something with that. So she created this dish called sisig, which basically translates to snack on something sour. So it's a very sour dish made with pork cheek, pig ear, liver, and calamansi, which is a Filipino citrus, kind of a hybrid between a lemon and a lime. And it also has onions, peppers, and a lot of vinegar, which is really common in Filipino cooking. So Chrissy Newcomb, who's the chef and owner at Casey Pinoy, makes a version of this. Hers is served with pork shoulder. And it comes on almost like a fajita plate, like a sizzling plate. So it's all chopped up. They crack an egg on top. And so when it comes to the table, you kind of mix the egg in it while it's still hot and sizzling, and it cooks the egg. It's just crunchy. It's fatty. It's sour. It's salty. It's spicy. It's the perfect dish.
Do you eat it with rice?
You do eat it with rice. You can get it with just steamed rice, or they also have a garlic rice, which is what I'd recommend.
Gina, I was going to actually say, if I can jump in for
one
second,
please.
That, you know, you had one caller call in about a Taiwanese restaurant, and the way Pete has been talking about some of the Thai restaurants is distinguished between Northern and Southern Thai.
Yes.
I think that's the question that you asked earlier about how I've seen sort of the landscape of Asian, you know, restaurants change in the United States, is I think we've had more awareness of regional Asian cooking. Mm-hmm. That, you know, when we were growing up, it used to be, oh, I'm going out for Chinese, or oh, I'm going out for Thai. But now there's, you know, we've gotten more granular about how we talk about Asian food, that you now know that there's Sichuan cooking is a region of China, and they have a very specific style of cooking that's different from maybe Taiwanese cooking or Hunan cooking. And same with Thai cooking. There's Northern and Southern Thai largely distinguished. And so I think that's another important thing, is that I think now we have restaurants that are more specialized in certain regional, you know, Asian cooking.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important distinction. And I think it shows the progress both of restaurant entrepreneurs taking more chances, but also just the evolving palate of American diners, you know, from the 80s, you know, or even further back to present day, to explore different tastes and, like, want things that are, quote unquote, you know, more authentic as well.
And I think it helps us to see other cultures, not in the view of just lumping everyone together and sort of like, oh, they all eat the same thing in whatever country, you know.
Totally.
Even in America, we don't do that. So,
yeah. I think, like, you know, at one time, like, you know, Italian food in the U.S. was, you know, Italian-American food and just kind of this one
sort of caricaturized version of it.
But, you know, we've seen, like, the evolution of Italian food to have more regional specialties depending on the restaurant. So I think the progress with Asian cuisine kind of mirrors some of those European cuisines as well.
Do you think that part of this has to do with just the way we experience the world in the age of the internet? It hasn't actually gotten smaller. The world's still quite large.
Sure.
But people have an awareness of something beyond their own backyard that would have been hard to achieve before.
I think it's a combination of the internet, travel as well. You know, people have been able to travel all over the world pretty inexpensively. So they try these dishes, you know, on the street or in restaurants in a very particular part of the country, and they want those flavors and experiences back home. And, you know, when you have larger, you know, more cosmopolitan cities like New York, or perhaps, you know, Chicago or San Francisco, Los Angeles, you can find a little bit more variety there because there are larger immigrant populations. But, you know, there's, you know, the internet travel and I think just a craving for more variety too.
And I also think our culture has moved towards living for experiences. I think that's something that a lot of the younger generation values is experiential living. And I think part of that experiential living is getting more to that kind of touchy word authenticity. Is I think that's what we kind of now look for our culture is we kind of value that authenticity and getting, you know, like I said, down to a lower level of granular data about what is actually authentic.
Danielle, as you're chatting with different chefs through your Open Belly podcast, are you finding that they're willing to take more chances, or they're, or just how they're presenting their food and their culture is they're more open to it?
Yeah, I found a lot of the folks that I've interviewed, they feel like they have this opportunity to educate people about their culture. And so it's not so much as a business. So I think in the past, there were people who went into the food business because that was what they knew how to do or had the opportunity to do. But now it's almost an opportunity to educate people. And so they want to do that justice, and they want to take the time to really cook what would be authentic or traditional versions of a dish from their family. And it's a passion for them. So they don't want to just phone it in with a kind of Americanized version of that dish.
Danielle, is there something on your list that you haven't talked about yet that fits the description you just gave?
Oh, yes. Okay, so there is an Indian restaurant that I hadn't heard about until recently, a northern Indian restaurant down in Overland Park off of 145th and Metcalf. It's called Shigan's, and I absolutely love the story of this restaurant as well. So the owner and chef, whose name is Shigan, used to be a bank teller here in Kansas City, and she started cooking her grandmother and great-grandmother's recipes that had been handed down for her coworkers at the bank. And the people that she worked with encouraged her, you know, you should really consider opening a restaurant. So she started catering. And for her, it was really just about cooking her family's food. It was comfort food. It was home-style cooking. And so she and her family opened Shigan's a little over a year ago. And what I like about it, too, is that you can get what's called a Thali plate, which is a plate that has different compartments so that you can try a little bit of everything. So they have a menu that changes every day, and it really is an opportunity for their family to introduce you to their culture, but also to pass down these family recipes where you can come in every day and try something different from their family, which I love. So I highly recommend Shigan's.
And you say it's mostly northern Indian food?
Yes. And to be totally honest, I don't completely understand the distinction. But that's what I love about going in there is they're like, this is specifically northern Indian food. So I can almost get a history lesson through eating the food.
Bonjwing, talk to me about Columbus Park Ramen.
Yeah. Well, here's another one that kind of touches upon that authenticity question. But, you know, we had Josh Ian's in before about that topic. And, you know, he's doing sort of it's a noodle shop. It's a ramen noodle shop, largely based off of Japanese ramen. And he has some bowls that are a little more traditional, like he has the tonkatsu, which is a very porky, very, very rich broth. But then he also gets very creative with other types of noodle dishes. I think last time I looked, he had a version of dandan noodles on his menu, which is traditionally a more Sichuan Chinese noodle dish. So I just think, you know, again, going back to what I said about pho, it's, you know, wintertime, you think of those comforting steaming bowls of soup and broth and noodles, and it's a very comforting place to get a big bowl of noodles.
Columbus Park Ramen. And Pete, talk to me about sushi. You're recommending two sushi places, Sayachi and Bob Wasabi.
Sure. They're probably my two favorite places to go eat sushi. I have people ask me all the time. There are some institutions that have been around town, like June's, you know, forever. And what I really like about Bob Wasabi on 39th Street is it's this small family-owned place. The chef, Bob Shin, brings a lot of experience, like decades of experience, and places he emphasizes premium fresh fish, which you think would be standard, but I think it varies if you eat a lot of sushi, and brings in like some different fish that you wouldn't necessarily see on other sushi restaurant menus.
And then Sayachi is a newer place on the scene.
Yeah, so Sayachi is opened by Chef Carlos Falcon and his wife Sayaka. It's their third restaurant, and this is a focus on Japanese cuisine as well as sushi, and then omakase, which is a style of service where you're allowing the chef to kind of present dishes to you, and you're kind of putting your hands and trust in the chef. Again, like Carlos, through his other restaurant, Jarocho, focuses on coastal Mexican food with a lot of seafood, and he's brought that freshness and ingredients to Siachi as well.
Pete, quickly before we go, I follow you on Facebook, so I know how much you love this place, and I just need you to quickly say something about it. Spices Asian Restaurant.
I love Spices. The owner there, she reminds me of my mom. And I love the spicy Thai pork sausage there. It's a northeastern Thai-style sausage that's slightly spicy, savory, lots of umami, and it's just delicious. And yeah, they're well-known for their mango dessert dish, too.
Pete Doolin, Bonjuang Lee, Danielle Lehman, thank you all so much.
Thanks, Gina.
Thank you.
I'm so hungry right now. Our list of the best places for Asian food in Kansas City will be online over the weekend, kcur.org. There's a lot we didn't even get to, so keep an eye out for that. And that's a wrap for the week. You can get lots of weekend listening material at kcur.org/centralstandard. Yesterday, we learned what socialism is and what it isn't, and how the term relates and doesn't to current political candidates. Socialism 101, you can grab it. And if you think it might be useful, give it a listen at kcur.org/centralstandard. This show is produced by Melody Rowell, Mackenzie Martin, Noah Taborda, and Sylvia Maria Gross. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. I'm Gina Kaufman. Over and out.